Hold a seat at the bar to join us for another episode of McAnally's Pubcast, a podcast exploring the fun and fantastical mind of Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files series. Hosts Tanzin Jess and Maggie bring you another round of literary analysis on this immense, immersive, and colorful environment inhabited by Harry Dresden, the world's only licensed private investigator and professional wizard. Join an active and engaged community of new and diehard dedicated fans focused on the fabulous themes, theories, characters, context, lore, and more. This is McAnally's Dresden Files Pubcast by Free Flow Rambling. Conjure by it at your own risk.
Welcome to the McAnally's Pubcast, brought to you by Free Flow Rambling. This is episode 19.1, Pride, Protection, and a Mischief, where we are covering the graphic novel Downtown. My name is Tanzin, and I'm joined by Maggie.
Hello, hello.
And Jess.
Fun fact, especially coming off a white night, lightning is hotter than the surface of the sun. Briefly.
Ooh,
cool.
Today I learned.
Not cool. Hot.
The war between the Red Court and the White Council rages on, but vampires are far from the only supernatural threat Chicago's only wizard for hire must stand against. Someone has unleashed an entity unlike any Harry has yet encountered, and it has begun targeting the innocent, seemingly indiscriminately. Along with his apprentice, Molly Carpenter, Harry must uncover the truth behind this new predator, no matter how far into darkness he must descend.
Issue 1. Harry and Molly begin to assist in the investigation of a supernaturally caused death that Murphy is looking into. Marcone warns Harry to not get involved.
Oh, that Marcone. Always. It doesn't matter. If Harry's involved, he tells him not to be. If Harry's not involved, he's like, you need to get involved. Marcone, make up your mind. Okay, can we start with this first page? Did this first page confuse anybody but me?
It was very confusing. Like, what's this random creep with the snow globe? Why are we cold? What?
Yeah, like, right there.
People are dying.
So right there, the dialogue doesn't make a ton of sense to me, right? He's looking at it. He's like, better cold outside, should be cold in here, too. He's like, men who sleep on the street won't wake up. So, and I'm like, okay, well, I don't really get. But the fact that he picks up the snow globe, and then, correct me if I'm wrong, this third panel looks to me like he is throwing it against the shelf/wall. It is breaking.
At first, I thought it was Harry's lab.
Yeah, I mean, one could wonder, but more the point of that
is that's not really.
But
Harry,
then you back
Harry
up died. To the last panel, and it's sitting on the shelf again, looking completely. So I'm like, it's, I don't know. He like throws it into an empty shelf. Now it's sitting on a completely cluttered shelf. I'm just like, already I'm confused. I'm like, this doesn't make sense.
He tosses it in an aggressive manner that allows it to plop down without breaking.
Yeah, it looks almost like it's broken glass, but I think it's more just like action.
Yeah.
Movement drawings.
Maybe. All of it just seems.
There's a lot of filth in that panel. It does look like a sound, like that impact sound. Without doing it?
Yeah, just that's the thing. I'm like, this is what I was like already. I'm like, I'm already confused. It looks like he like is throwing it, but then he like doesn't, and it's like the shelf is empty, then it's not. And I'm like, his dialogue doesn't. Even as you, once you start getting into, because I get that sometimes. Sometimes when you first read, like I was, Jessica and I were talking about books a while ago, and there was one, a great series I love, but I had to start it a few times before I could finally wrap my head. But yeah, just, I'm like, even once I get into the story, I'm like, I still don't really understand this. Like, again, it's better. It's cold outside. It should be cold in here. I'm like, what?
Well,
I think it establishes right away we're dealing with a crazy person.
And maybe that's all it is.
It's maniacal mutterings.
Maybe that's all it is, I guess. But even that, because I was like, you'd think with the snow globe thing, you'd think you were going like, yeah, cold in here, cold out there, blah, 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 that you would have. And yet the snow globe has absolutely nothing. Sorry, guys, spoiler alert. The snow globe has absolutely nothing to do with anything.
But even before we get here, I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
And this is just a structure for graphic novels, and I don't read a lot of graphic novels, but I noticed that the cover is by a different artist than the actual
work of the
by the the pencils and the colors and the letters that are in the actual novel.
That's actually pretty common for graphic novels.
Is it actually?
Because it's not necessarily, it's a little bit off, but one of the actual issues is way different style. And what's weird is it's the same cover artist.
Yeah, I think sometimes the cover art sometimes almost never doesn't have anything to even do with the story inside. Sometimes it comes across wildly different.
I was going
to
say sometimes almost like an opening act. It's like you get like a guest star does like the cover, and then the guy that does all the...
Even outside of the Dresden Files, there's always...
I don't read a ton of, but yes, I have seen that kind of thing. Yeah.
I was just confused that it's mostly just one of the issues that's like quite a
that
different
you have an
style.
Issue with? I have an issue with one of the issues.
I think I know what you're... But yes, yeah, that is not... And I think, like you said, I think there's... Because I was... Whatever. There are a couple of different cover artists. It's not just...
As far as I know, it's just the one guy.
Did it not change? I got to flip, because that's what I was going to
do. Pencils by Carlos Gomez. Colors by Moron. Letters by Bill. Cover by Steven Sajic. Consulting editors. Many.
I'm going to guess, like... Most of that is not pronounced the way Jessica did, but we'll forgive her.
Don't trust me with any of the pronunciations.
Anglicized.
Molly Mahan.
Yeah, I was going to say that probably makes more sense than like Moron. But
as far as I know, I think that all of the covers are done by the same one.
Maybe they were.
And we'll go through it, like, because I've got them open, but...
Yeah, because I was going to say, I thought, because I know
the one that I have an issue with is the same Stepan.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just your like opportunity to try something new.
Kind of does, yeah, to me too. But you're right, it is. It's
just... My assistant did the cover.
Maybe that's what it is. It's not like a big like cameo by. It's that's how artists get their thing. Is the assistants get to do like cover art? It's like I'm gonna do the real work. You can do the cover, and then if people like you, they'll ask you to start doing work.
Right.
But yes.
But back to the actual novel itself.
Comics
mystery guy.
Use different artists for covers, primarily to drive sales through variant covers, attract fans of specific guest artists, and free up the interior artists to meet tight monthly deadlines without compromising sequential storytelling.
There you go.
Well, thank you, Jess. Answered my question.
I was going to say there is that too, because exactly, if you like it, you'll buy like the 10 different copies with the 10 different cover arts, even though it's the exact same story. So that is, yes, something.
This cover's done McFarlane? Yes. Want more?
Persuaded and tempted to join those ranks.
Yep, right.
Yeah. So we do have mystery creep.
Oh, yeah. So for me, the beginning of this chapter, going back to our very first graphic novel, Welcome to the Jungle, and it was very Hecate and Greek mythology elements thrown in. When this guy was going off about chaos and order, I thought we were going to go back to, like, you know, Gaia and, original Greek myths, which started with first there was chaos and then everything else, you know? So for a second, I was like, okay, I'm with you. Chaos. Okay. Order. Oh, nope. Just a random murder. All right.
Yeah. Just nothing to, yep. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we're introduced to the voodoo throne.
The voodoo throne.
I don't know what else to call it. It looks like a throne and with offerings to...
Yeah, I just like called it an altar. But yeah, voodoo throne is what it looks like.
But that's what's weird about it. It is. It's like his throne and his altar, though.
He doesn't have a lot of room in this incredibly roomy sewer.
I think they're different because the place that he sits has much more gears on it. Because I was like, that's like the steampunk iron throne. This one's like,
yeah, it looks like a wheelchair. Skulls.
We'll have to go back
it's
and
got
read
wheels on
because I
you're
the
weird
same
one, Mr. Grinch.
Throne altar thing, right?
So he kills
random pawn dude,
a pawn guy.
Yeah,
because he's a pawn.
We get the exact same image from the throne to this guy's actual face.
Yeah,
some haggling going on. Although he seems very fair about his pawn shop haggling.
I was just gonna ask. Do you get the sense? Is he running a con or is he? Because on the surface, what he says, he's like, you know, I doubt I keep going to, you know. But I mean, again, it's just the, like remember, it's just I'm like depending on what tone you read it on, like he's actually being really fair and nice to them. Or he's totally being like, it's just a thing. Give me your $5,000 heirloom, and I'll give you $45 for it.
I didn't take it as smarmy at all. I took it as fair. He's explaining he has a bottom line.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, look, material stuff or you can eat.
Yeah. Like, if it was like important, I think it'd be like, this was owned by Thomas Jefferson or some shit. It's just a watch. Who cares?
Well, maybe, yes.
And especially This is the worst time to be selling watches. Like, what? Actually, you know, that's another thing. This graphic novel, is set a couple of months after White Knight.
Mm-hmm.
But in real life, it was published 6 years after White Knight.
Oh.
It was published in 2013. White Knight came out in 2007.
Good to know.
Watches don't matter anymore. Okay? You're lucky you got 45.
But heirloom pocket watches do, my
dear. They don't. They really don't.
Collectors and sentiment. Yeah.
No, nobody cares about them
anymore.
Give
me back all the pocket watches I've ever given you.
Okay, fine. But mine are still definitely not worth more than $45.
Maybe not, but the importance is to the... Yes, if you're legitimately trying to pawn them, fine. But you just said they're not important. I'm like, they're important to people, but yes, right. They're not maybe worth... But yeah, I could just, I was like, you can easily see it as either, I'm like, it's totally being reasonable and sweetheart, or it's totally.
Yeah, and
because then he immediately dies, so that's the other thing. It was like, is he actually some asshole that died, but.
I get nothing smarmy from the artwork or the dialogue. It's just very matter-of-factly, like, he's like, look, I gotta have some sort of margin for me to do this too. Like, I would.
Yeah.
So. Either way, he is dispatched quite violently.
It's not a Buffy novel. All the monsters aren't metaphors, you know, like the vampires.
So, okay, let's move on to something that's important. Do you know how many O's come into your standard Scrabble board?
Okay, thank you. I'm not the only one who's like, what the fuck?
The answer is 8. Do you know how many O's you need to spell too cold?
3.
3.
Molly has no excuse for misspelling that.
I pointed that out.
You know, it's not even the author's fault because Harry uses it correctly in the same panel.
Well, this is what you get for people who are penciling things in, a separate person for coloring things in, and a separate person who's lettering them. The guy who's lettering it in is be like, I'm going to be the smarty. Haha.
All right, Mohan, Carlos.
it's funny, too, because the Hi Harry is like 7 letters, and the Too Cold is 6 letters. So I'm like, you could have put that extra O in.
She's getting tired.
You did? Well, and I think that exactly is the point, that she's just doing minimal. He's like, that's his descriptive, right? It's just funny that. Mm. Especially because we've described before that Molly's not like an idiot or anything like that, too. So, you know, it would be, you know, if you were, like, still clinging to the thing where she,
I know. I just thought, like, it'd be smart if it's like, Scrabble only comes with 2 O's. I'd be like, oh, you guys are smart and know your stuff. But
No.
She is clearly still sassy, though, because she's, you know, gives the...
F you, Harry. Why did you mime it like you were afraid to swear on this podcast? I hesitated before she said it. Okay, so Harry and Molly's training continues.
I really appreciate, actually, seeing the...
Trials?
The apartment. What I don't appreciate is his mouse, because mouse is actually not bad here, but he progressively just gets crazier looking.
Yeah, I agree. It's not horrible here, but I agree. Later in the book, I was like, that's not mouse, but
that was even like...
That's a changeling there.
Even like the external shot of the house, I'm like, it doesn't match up
with
my...
Yeah, that's not what
the
house looks like.
No, and then the basement, I'm still like,
this is what happens when fans don't do the drawings.
I know, and especially...
See, I thought the basement was a ladder down, not like one of those...
It is. The sub-basement is like that folding stepladder kind of... But it is like the folding thing, right? It's not like that is. But again, the lab had way too much. Like, and again, this, right? I'm like, I understand it would be difficult to draw that, and I'm sure as an artist and whatever you want. But the whole point is how fucking cramped everything is. His tiny car, his tiny house. Although Beatles have a lot of interior room, which is why it works for him. But you know, his tiny lab where there's like barely enough room to. And he's got all this wide open space. I'm like, no.
Well, we can see there's the shelf there. It's not necessarily that. Wide open.
Are you talking about the basement?
Yeah, in the
because
perspective where
Harry
where
has described it multiple times. He has basically like a U-shaped counter around the walls and one down the middle. And so that gap, right, so he's got...
But he also has a couch.
No. I'm talking about the lab basement.
Oh, I'm talking about this panel here, about the main...
Oh. That's where I was like confused. But yes, even that is a little bit. He does have a couch and stuff like that, but it's still, I don't know, slightly more.
It lacks the amount of wall coverings and that doesn't he have wall coverings too?
It seems cleaner and spacious where Harry's is not.
Yeah.
Yes.
Harry's is like wall to wall bookshelves and Star Wars posters and rugs covering the whole floor. And where the hell is the fireplace supposed to fit in this place?
And there is, like you say, just enough room for the couch and the chair and everything. You know, I tend to picture it as kind of like your space here, which doesn't help our listeners. But, you know, like his whole apartment
by the time
like,
we have all the equipment in.
Free tourist, anyone who wants to come to Canada.
See where we record live. She doesn't mind.
I think the other thing that I was kind of surprised to look at was at this initial image of Molly with her two-tone hair. Because I thought it was like the left side was blue and the right side was pink. Like it was a split, not just
I think it kind of gets a fade. She's Harley Quinn. We get a touch of that in like the flashback right here. Like
it switches, In the flashback, it's like one left and right. But here it's worn out.
That was the end or the beginning, whatever. That was proven guilty. Where, yes, when Harry shows up at the station, he's like, she's got bubblegum and cotton candy hair or whatever. This is now a year
maybe she's redone it, but it's growing out.
Yeah, this is like a year to 2 years later where exactly, I think that some of it is exactly the growing out where she's more, but she is described as more blonde in White Knight than she was in, and then whatever she's, you know, redone or not. But yes, I think that is part of it, is that it's just
kind of like it as a fade like this. I think that's really cool looking hair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't, yeah. I just, again, some of like, even just her like flopping back on the couch here, it just, I don't know, it looks half like a dead like corpse body with her hair fanning out like she's in movement. I'm just like, I don't know. I'm sorry. I want to like graphic novels so much.
You care too much.
Yeah, I care too much. I think one of my main gripes
is the female form in all of these. Because it's very much the male gaze. Yeah. All of the men have very solid stances. Their knees are not locked. They're not hyperextended. They have a little bit of a bend.
Did you miss the part about appealing to a broader audience?
But all the women are either they have got hyperextended knees, like they're wearing high heels when they're not.
That's showbiz,
baby. Their hips and buttocks are like extended. They're pushing their bosoms forward. Every motion is like so unbelievably awkward to actually. Every woman has Burson hips.
Stand or move, and yeah. Yeah, you're like a total contortionist.
They all have fucking titties.
Yep.
Harry and a flat in the bunch.
So Murphy calls Harry.
He's keeping us on track. We got the flashback, though. It's not bad. It's just, this was not what Ramirez was wearing. He was wearing.
Yeah.
He had an Offspring shirt, just for the record, and green cargo pants.
I seem to recall something about that.
Yeah, he's dressed closer to what Thomas was wearing.
Yeah, because there was a Punisher shirt mentioned, but it wasn't what he was wearing.
So maybe that's Thomas, because Thomas was the one wearing Harry's cloak.
Oh.
So that's Thomas with the sword and the guns. Although Thomas doesn't have that mustache. So, you know.
Because she's quite young looking in that flashback, like, but she's got like divided pink and blue hair. It's not like a fade out. And then we go to...
Yeah, in the flashback, like I said, that was her cotton candy.
Where it says right there, it's White Knight. Like, that's not what he was wearing in that scene.
No.
Only because I actually diagrammed what he was wearing when we were going through the books. But yes, they do get called to the crime scene.
Yes.
I kind of want Molly's cat ear toque.
Or yeah, that is cute.
Beanie for those who are south of the border.
Beanie, yes. That is rather cool. And again, it's funny. Like I said, I've said it before. I'm like, in some ways, I search out artwork to get sometimes like help with. But, and then you present me with a graphic novel. I'm like, no, everybody looks wrong. Rollins isn't terrible, but again, I'm like, no, it doesn't match my Rollins.
I like Harry. Harry's pretty close for me.
Harry's not too bad in this. It depends on the expressions and the angles of the face. And again, I get this is like an art thing.
I think Murphy's not cute enough for how many times Harry has described her as being, you know, button-nose cute.
Yeah. She's a little bit more hard-boiled.
Yeah.
Just a touch. But yeah, Harry in this is not bad. And definitely certain sort of angles and poses.
I know, I totally got Rollins wrong.
Yeah. That's funny.
I heard fatherly and I think of my dad.
Who
is a white Dutch man.
Sorry.
Oops.
Yeah. No, Rollins is definitely. Nope.
I got it wrong.
You have to pay attention to his speech when he's like, Rollins is baby, or Mama Rollins didn't raise no stupid baby boy. Like, you know what I mean? Like the way he talks too, he gets that.
Yeah. I just defaulted on the fatherly part. I'm really bad with imagery in books though too. And I'm like, at first I'll get them and then I'll have already forgotten by the time we read the next paragraph what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's so easy, like you say, if your brain fills in a thing and then just, like, makes that work for you. That's just what your brain goes with. But does that help anymore when he gets to call her, like, Carrie and stuff like that? I'm like, again, you just see that type of character the way it's been.
It's a nice change for me. I like it.
Yeah.
They get to see the aftermath of the poor pawn shop guy.
Yeah. And I like that Murphy's Sam all like, Fogel. Should we really bring in Molly to this? And Harry's like, kids gotta learn.
Kids, yeah. This
and
is...
especially after she's already saw a bunch of dead bodies in the last book, so it's fine.
Yeah, between like, yeah.
Hey, she didn't puke this time.
Right? Between Proven Guilty and White Knight, she, right? I'm like, yeah, she's...
Hell, even Harry puked that first book.
It ain't so her first Romeo. It ain't her first rodeo. I think he mentioned the hotel and I went back to the Roman.
Romeo?
I mean, it ain't her first Romeo either, but not her first rodeo for blood and guts and gore.
I was a little bit surprised at the look of Sam Fogel, like, because he looks more skeletal and like...
Yes.
Because his face, I don't know, like, how the attacks go for
image,
the next ones?
The,
or like
the dead
more,
body is more, like, desecrated or whatever. Yeah, desiccated. Desecrated, too, I guess. But desiccated, yeah.
Well, yeah, this seems much more like a message.
Blunt force. The other ones are more blunt force, and this one is, like...
Yeah, this one seems posed, though.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah, because he's like, pinned to the wall or whatever, and I don't know.
Looks like he's almost missing an eye. It's hard to tell.
He is.
He is, yeah. There's definitely a gap.
It zooms in on his face later.
It's like half and half, right? It is.
But
it's
like the peeling away of his face near his teeth, right?
Like, yeah, that's what I mean. So that half is missing, like, the eye and all, like, the whereas that has still partially covered on his teeth and his, but yeah.
After reading it once and then coming back to see it, it was like, is that accurate? Is that consistent?
Yeah. You would also think with Molly not being her first rodeo, she would be wearing waterproof mascara by now to shit like this. When you're running around in the wizard world, like, you know your makeup's not gonna...
No forensic gloves.
I know, right? Yeah. Right. Ugh. And now you have to go home. I don't want to.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I like when she's actually reading this watch, though, and I was kind of like, it's a little bit inconsistent in the artwork because, you know, you get this 20-year-old, like, over-sexualized look for her for the most part. But then you get that profile picture that makes her look really young. She looks almost like she's 12. And it's like, it sort of evokes for me this sense of vulnerability while she's reading these psychically reading
She is. So I didn't mind. She's a grown-up, but she's a kid, yeah.
In this moment that she looked a lot younger.
Yeah. Because, yes, I think that is, like,
just
the
because
intent
the evocative
of, yes, without the... But again, right, because, yeah, she's looking back on this lifetime, you know, of this young woman, right, seeing this little girl and her dying father, and then all of a sudden,
and
death, like,
and
just...
murder, violent.
Yeah.
Well, good on Molly, because she says, like, whatever it was, I think it's just getting started, like, to feel that sort of...
Yeah. I do like that one shot of her close-up of the eyes is a thing. I do like that picture, really. Yeah.
And one of the other things that we do get is we do get a solid age check for her that she is officially 20 years old at this point.
Yeah.
Good job, Molly.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Molly's age is actually the only thing that ruins the timeline.
Is it?
Yeah.
And if you actually look from this one?
No, it's actually ruined before that. But if you like actually like make up a whole timeline of things that happened, supposedly when her birthday is and when the ages are that she's, it's stated in the books, hers is the only one that is like, she was either born in 86 or 87 or something like that. Because it's like, it doesn't make sense otherwise. She has to be both ages for.
When is she supposed to, like, you have like a birthday for her? Because I was going to say, maybe she's one of those like December babies where technically she's born in 86, but it basically counts as 87 for her because she was, you know, in 86 for like 2 days. But if it's supposed to be like July of 86, then yeah, that's harder.
First, she's 12 years old before Stormfront starts.
Mm-hmm.
So she's born 12 years before Stormfront starts.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly in White Knight, she jumps a year older.
I see.
And then it subsequently stays the same after that. But yeah, in White Knight, her ages, she goes up a year.
Clearly
no birthday having happened, but it doesn't say the actual month.
Okay.
Parallel dimension.
Yeah, according to, Death Max and Proven Guilty, her age is inconsistent.
She just stuck with the fake ID.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
It's impolite to ask a lady her age anyway.
Right.
It is nice that Harry has stuck with making sure that she keeps familial ties. With sending her back to the carpenter house.
Yes, and especially since, again, right, buddy with Michael and that, as he points out a few times, it's like, I'm supposed to be keeping you safe. Go home, check in, give them proof positive I haven't killed or maimed you yet.
The car looks a little too pristine for me. This drop-off part. I mean, granted, each panel's a different color. It's
it's not beat up enough.
It all looks really nice.
I know. I was like...
All it needs is a paint job.
Right. Yeah, that's the only problem is that, yeah, you got the replacement parts, but it's like the replacement parts are all still new. And I'm like, no. 5 seconds after he gets them, the replacement parts are beat to shit.
So afterwards, Harry heads to the coiffure cup to visit his pretend boyfriend.
Yep, again, not 100% on board with Thomas's look either. Doesn't match my headcanon, sorry. But, you know, whatever.
I still think of Billy Idol for... Which is completely, utterly
wrong. I mean, I like a Spike moment for, but yeah, it's not Thomas, but...
Yeah, and we get the start of bad, really, really bad women skeletons going on.
Yeah. I've said it before, I've said it again, and I don't know, like, the whole... It makes a great cover. The joke is kind of funny, but at the same time, it still bugs me how much they sort of play into the boyfriend factor for the brothers. Mm. I'm like, that's the only... I'm like, I don't know, like, I kind of... Like, it's sort of amusing, yeah, too, but I'm just
no,
like...
No, real siblings would not play that game.
Not for this long, I don't think. Like, yeah. You know, I... Like, in a moment...
Yeah, and even a one-off stranger, but, like, your employees that you see consistently every day, like...
Yeah, I mean, like, again, I mean... Not again, not that they're ever, like, physically demonstrative. They don't, you know, go... Not like in... most recently, okay, like White Collar, where they do the whole, like, quick, somebody's coming, kiss me, and pretend we're just a couple making out on the street so they don't recognize us.
Or like, Game of Thrones.
Never watched it, but I will tell you. Well, that one, though, they are. That's part of the reason why, yeah, they are siblings, you do. But
they go above and beyond.
Above and beyond. But yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, at least it doesn't. But yeah, exactly. Like, what are you going to do when, like, 10 years later it comes out finally that, yeah, he's your brother and not? I'm like, okay, well, at least you weren't, like, actually making out in front of them, but yeah. It's just one of those things where I'm like, I don't know. I just always walk that line of like, I don't know if I like this or not.
I mean, the joke probably should have just
maybe not as much emphasis on it because other things start to be more important. But anyways, yeah. But this is what I mean. So now we're getting down to the sub-basement. And this is like, yeah, so again.
Oh, yes, moving on. We're no longer at the coffee cup.
We're no longer, yeah, well, they, I don't know, they just didn't really do, they just,
Thomas didn't know anything,
what Thomas was doing,
but he,
yeah.
You know, you need his help, he did his, like, you know.
Yeah, just in case you forgot, at the end of the last book, we found out what Thomas was doing, and here's your recap on, and that's the, I think maybe again, because the graphic novels are shorter, because I'm like, we always get a certain amount of recap in the books, just in case, I mean, A, to remind people if they're not going to reread the whole series every time a new book comes out, or be anybody that's, you know, jumping in. But it just feels like so much exposition and commentary again on these. I'm like, yeah, we know, yeah. Like, you know, 3 pages to tell us who Thomas is and Thomas doesn't come back for the rest of the book.
Well,
I'm like, okay.
I mean, in fairness, the publication date between the last book and now has been several years. So
well,
maybe that's why they added the extra bit.
It is. I'm just saying, like, again, that's just, I'm like, I get you. I think it's just because they're so much smaller in that it doesn't, I mean, leave as much
room. If you didn't
want
to do a reread before you got to this
that's what I mean. And yeah, a lot of people, I'm sure not everybody rereads the entire series every time, and it was just fine. I just...
Yeah. But we're in the... So we are to the point where they're in the sub-basement, and they are examining the booger.
Which, again, looks like a little stone or something in the tweezers, and she's like, it looks like a booger. I'm like, no, it doesn't. It looks like a rock or something. It's a really old, dried booger.
It's hard to convey squishiness.
Yeah, you're such a judger.
I am such a judger about certain things. I don't know. I feel they do a pretty good job later on.
I mean, they clearly, repeatedly mention the consistency. So just the fact that, yes, it is looking like a rock at this point. They have done their due diligence in the descriptors as mucus and snot-like.
See, you could make it, like, more squishy in the tweet, but it's just sad. That's the thing. He's, like, holding it in a pair of tweezers very firmly. I'm just saying, dudes. But the biggest thing is, yes, how expansive his tiny sub-basement is. And that's where I was commenting about, where he has barely enough room to walk around.
Yeah, but they're not in the sub-basement. They're in the living room.
Then
surprisingly.
Then why is there a stepladder down into it if this is the living room?
I would like you to direct your attention to Harry opening the door. Oh, maybe he already went up that part.
Yeah, he has to go up the steps.
See? Okay.
So no, they are in
the sub. Listen, I don't know what's happening.
You can also see that.
Yeah, I got you.
In the page before, Bob's sitting on the shelf.
Screw that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all. But yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Knock, knock, knock. Grr, grr, grr.
Wham, wham, wham.
For some reason, Marco.
It sounds like the neighbor kids.
God,
you have to give me enough time to get the fucking door to answer it.
God forbid your granddaughter is a popular girl and it just makes you angry. You just yell at them to get off your lawn.
Who is it?
Because they won't leave the lawn.
You should be happy they knock. I stopped knocking on my friend's door very early on. I just went in.
That's different.
So we have at the door Marcone, Hendrix, and Guard. Now, I'm okay with Marcone.
Nope, not. Nope. Nope.
I just said okay. I didn't say fully approving.
You can be okay.
He looks like Superman's father, Jor-El, to me. Every time he's drawn, he looks like Superman, but old.
Maybe.
My issue is Guard.
Yeah, Guard I don't like.
She's always in a bun and a pantsuit. And in this, she's got her hair down, luscious, and a tight little skirt.
There's so much wrong with it. Like her and she's always like really awkwardly set. She's looks like her legs look like she's in high heels,
she's
but then when
breasts forward.
When they show her, she's actually in flats, but her legs are presenting like she is
in heels.
Tilting forward in heels. The axe handle is not enough to actually hold the head of the axe.
I guess that's magical too. Because the axe is kind of cool, but like again in this first shot, it looks like Marcone is wearing like a fucking Napoleon hat. Right? And then like in there's other ones where it's like again, even in the next one, it looks almost more like, I don't know, half a timepiece. There's like the runes. She's like, I don't know.
Hendrix looks a little understated too. Like, I mean, yes, he's in the background, but Guard looks like she's towering.
Yeah, Hendrix doesn't look big enough.
Yeah. Hendrix, like the face wise and sort of the stature, like I don't mind so much.
Is less of a podcast, more of an art critique.
It is. It is.
But what happened to the Dresden Files? Who cares? What happened to these artists? Oh, man.
I don't mind Guard from the head up kind of thing. Like, her just sort of feature, other than, like you say, the hair would normally be. I could live with that version of Guard. Hendrix, same thing. I'm like, as an overall sort of how he, I don't, other than, like you say, he should be represented as seeming more hulking and taller behind. But yeah, no, Marcone's body in that? No, I could not.
Marcone's supposed to look like a soccer coach. He doesn't look like a soccer coach in him.
Yeah, exactly. That kind
someone's
of
someone's favorite uncle?
Middle-aged yachting boater. Yeah, I'm like, my version of him, I'm like, yeah, no, I couldn't get behind this.
Favorite uncles come in a lot of different shapes and sizes.
They do, but it's partially like the super slick back hair thing too on it.
They really push the mafia aspect
of
it.
Yeah, like where Combs a little like salt and pepper. Like he's graying at the temples, right? He should have more of that like Doctor Strange kind of, right? Not like all silver and not all slicks back. That like it's just things like that where I'm just like, nope, that doesn't do it for me for the.
And I like to point out right now he doesn't have. That the artist did not put this scar on his face. Later on, he does, though.
Yeah, I know.
Like, and I'm like,
yeah. When did Marcone get a slash through his eyeball? Yeah. Like, yeah,
It wasn't shown as far as I could
tell.
That's
like artistic license or whatever.
And it was only for like the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, I don't know. He's supposed to get it in that battle and have sliced his eye open, and it's just dried up. And
so historically, has Molly had any interactions with Marcone? Personally, I don't think she.
That's the other thing too.
Like she is like instantly enraged.
Yeah, the drama here is a little bit crazy. I don't think that if this was a novel and you had like 1,000 words, it would play out bigger. But since you only have like 2 panels to get it done, fuck you, Marcone. We don't like you.
Yeah, and again, like Molly can be very passionate about this, but again, I'm like even this, I don't see Molly at this stage yet when she's still.
She's young and naive. She's like hates everyone. Her boss hates. I kind of get that.
I get that, but for her,
are upstanding, and you're a bad guy, and my boss hates you. So therefore,
yeah, I understand her feeling all of that. I just don't see her coming on this strong to them.
I agree. I think it's literally just graphic novel.
She would
you gotta
be like,
move things
faster. Marcone, you right? She'd just be like, I hate this.
If they're civil right now, it would be weird because they're not friends. Even though being civil is just the normal.
She should just be standing in the back glaring at him.
It could have been successfully done with one comment of like, dirtbag.
Yeah,
something
right?
Just like.
Yeah, rather than her basically trying to look like she's going to come to blows with Marcone and Hendrix and Guard.
I mean, if it's a way to like reiterate that he's part of the Unseelie.
Yeah.
And like to get in a fight.
But this is again, right, this is where the whole. I was commenting this to somebody as I was reading it just the other day, is that the graphic novels are a different tone, right? Again, Harry is more sarcastic and witty, and whereas here it's all like noir and hard-boiled detective, like, you know what I mean? Like the tones of graphic novels are just right. You don't get the same sort of snappy sarcastic.
Do you think they're in the same universe? Because like it was how it was explained to me to enjoy the TV shows was to think of it as a parallel universe. So it is yes.
These accurate, more so
but
because
in a different universe. Are these in a different universe?
I think you do. I think you definitely need to take a bigger step back from the TV show. I just saw Paul Blackthorne in something the other day, and I was like, I wish they'd done that better.
And they're going to.
Because like, you're not a bad, like, he wasn't a bad Harry, all things. But yeah.
Just a little bit balding for my taste.
A little, yes, that. Wow. But again,
he was an awesome.
Given a real live actor, I'm willing to sort of give like a few little. Because like I say, with the TV show, enough differences that I think it's safer to look at it as completely here because they do, like you say, just even in the paddle specifically, sort of like, in White Knight, this just happened, right? So I feel it is still more in the same universe, even if it doesn't necessarily like advance the main novels more, but on a slightly different, I don't know, almost like a theme party or something. This is still the Dresden world, but it's like the musical. It's like, this is still the Dresden world, but like, the hard-boiled detective without the sassy, catchy.
I kind of almost see this as not necessarily. You can take it or leave it in the universe. Like it's
a little bit. Canon, but it doesn't really matter.
But to me, it establishes Marcone's function as the new Baron.
Yes, like, it underlines that seriously. A little bit because yes, this is still a newer.
Yeah, but I don't think it's even like supernatural, really. I mean, this is just what he was doing before that. It's like Harry being a fucking warden now. He's like, I was already doing that. Right. Marcone's like, I was already protecting the people of Chicago for a price.
Right. But this is also establishes just how deep into the supernatural that he's an understanding, which we didn't necessarily... We knew kind of had an idea.
With the addition of Garde, especially.
We don't know how far until we get sort of into some of the meat and cheese of this that he's like, yeah, I know. I know.
Coolest part is in the upcoming issues when you actually get, like, point of view from Marcone, because Harry doesn't get that in the regular novels, right? But to actually sit in on Marcone's meetings is like, ooh, hello.
Real side note, I also like Tansen's priorities. Normally, we're like the meat and potatoes of a situation. Tansen's like, no, the meat and cheese. That's where it's really at.
baby.
You're not wrong.
Oh, that's funny. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I don't
know that one.
Don't get me wrong. I love potatoes.
I was going to say, I know what you're doing when we wrap you. Yeah, you see, Marcone was, but he wasn't protecting the city in the same way. Like, he's doing a lot of the same. He's carrying on business as usual, a lot of the same. But it is a little bit different with the supernatural side of it now, right? Now, again, it's not just like, oh, I got to worry about gangsters coming in at me, right? Now he's looking at this much bigger picture of other things. And he's not just protecting, like, oh, don't, you know, hustle in on my drug trade. But now he's like, oh, yeah, if a monster comes in and eats all of Chicago, nobody's here to buy my drugs.
And above and beyond, he's not, in this particular set, he is not eliciting help from Harry. He's trying to...
He's trying to ice him out
because this is... He's like, no, this is now my responsibility. It's not yours anymore.
That's exactly, yeah. There's kind of that power balance there going on. Whereas Harry has kind of been this unofficial... you know, protector of the people kind of a thing. And Marcone is now like, okay, well, now I'm the official. Like, now that I know what's going on and ask for a seat at the table, like, yeah, your little Batman no longer compares to my, like, Baroncy kind of a thing, right? Like, yeah, it's...
It's establishment.
It's a little bit more of an establishment. Yeah, specifically, he's like, now that I know what's going on and now that I've equipped myself to have, like, I have guard and stuff like that, I don't need you. I don't want you handling this. I am now equipped to do this. So,
and on that note, the issue ends with a
someone
warning.
Someone got killed. I'm
a warning.
Yeah.
Stay out of it, Dresden. Stay out of it.
Yeah. Respect my boundaries and stay out of the way as I resolve this my way.
Thank you to our Patreon subscribers for your generous support. It's people like you who help us do what we do. If you're not yet a Patreon subscriber, sign up today and get a fuck ton of bonus content, kick-ass merch, behind-the-scenes outtakes, and more. Sign up today at patreon.com/freeflowrambling. Issue 2. Harry enlists Bob help with checking out the crime scene. While they talk, the monster attacks a man next door at the laundromat and kills him. With the help of Bob, Harry enlists a nature spirit, which brings him to Undertown. Molly, in the meantime, is attacked by the mysterious substance from the crime scene.
Broken snow globe?
There's your broken snow globe.
Right? See?
It's Which is out of place because that original one, unless he was in the pawn shop while he was...
He had a collection. He has multiple broken snow globes.
Some people collect them whole. His thing is, no, I collect the broken ones.
They make him feel sad.
Even this whole place looks... Well, like Bob says, it looks more like a bomb went off here than just like one guy got killed in a pawn shop. Right. I'm like, was there this much destruction in the first picture when they were there with Murphy? Like,
yeah, he must have fucking thrown his body on every wall.
Meanwhile, the rock-like snot has just been like eating away at all the materials and just like progressively melting it down to the bare bones.
It definitely looks like there is much more destruction in this introduction here.
Yeah, in this, yeah. So, but whatever.
We're like the Undertown, these comics lack cohesion.
Right. And why is Bob missing teeth?
I did actually wonder that too. Like, oh.
Somebody thought it was gritty.
I can even, again, the artistic inspiration. Because I'm like, again,
this is where his spirit escapes. So, Bob really basically makes Harry do all the work. Let's discuss this with him. He doesn't actually help all that much. He's just like, well, what do you think? He's like a psychiatrist or a counselor. What do you think? How did that make you feel? What's the problem?
So see this scene here, again, this tone of graphic novels being a little bit different. So again, as I was saying about the snappy, witty dialogue we normally get from Harry and stuff, like this whole thing about like Bob being like, oh, wow, Harry finally admits he's like master of the obvious. I'm like, this does not sound like Bob's voice. This does not sound like Harry's voice. Like, this is not the standard I'm used to from Butcher. So the interesting thing there is, because I actually double-checked. I was like, Butcher does write these, right? Like, is this somebody? And it says Butcher and this Mark Powers guy. And I have to find...
What he also does, maybe?
Yeah.
Because it looks like to me that these graphic novels are not actually directed specifically at Butcher's usual...
It's obviously not quite the... Yeah, yeah, right. I get it.
Modified enough for new people and some other group that maybe that other guy has.
Yeah, like the art and the this or whatever where, you know, Harry in hats on all his...
Are these graphic novels trying to feed into people, like, grab people to read the
I think,
Dresden
yeah,
files?
It's another venue. Another venue to reach out to fans and get them interested.
Yeah, it is a different... And I mean, that's fair. But again,
it works. If we know that's what it is.
It's fair and it works. It's just, again, right? When you're a fan of the other one or when you're.
It just means the details don't actually matter anymore because we're just trying to advertise.
More honed into, yeah, what the other style is. Like you say, it's more jarring.
Especially when it doesn't have any bearing to the universe's story, advancing the storyline. To me, it doesn't. None of this series, this particular. Downtown does not contribute to the universe to me, with the exception of character development for Mercom.
Yeah.
And a little bit of Molly seeing, yeah. showing Molly's progression, too.
Yeah, but yeah, it does. It has very little. Sorry, this is completely side. This is just this cover here as I'm going past, just with the yellow, whatever. It looks like she's sitting in a nest and laying an egg.
It does, from here, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's a vampire about to bite her.
It was funny, though, because when I first, yes, went to look, I don't know which one, because it's not the same as this one now that I found. But the first thing, somebody must have copied the wrong bio, because for Mark Powers, they had, he's, like, attorney at law and has, like, developed a whole, like, attorney teaching system. I'm like, what the hell does this have to do with comics? Like, it was, this, and I was just trying to find it again. And now I found what is presumably the right or the real or whatever.
The right person.
The right, yeah, because it was, because yeah, because it says Mark Powers was an editor at Marvel Comics for over 10 years before moving to Devil's Due, where he wrote G.I. Joe and created the sci-fi title Drafted. He's also written Rest for Top Crow and numerous graphic novels and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the other one was just
so this is a very experienced Marvel writer.
Yeah, it's not that, but it does explore, right? Like, yeah, it's not just 100% written by Butcher. So I'm like, again, the tone being different and some of the dialogue being, I'm like, okay, that is
so
why.
So knowing that, like, but I think just, this is just a pitch for new audience.
Yeah, it just was really funny when I got to the thing and all it's talking about was this guy being like a lawyer and training new lawyers. And this guy wrote a call. Like, I kept waiting for it to be, and then he wrote, and I was like, yeah.
Which does explain all of the new recapitulation of details that we otherwise would already know as existing fans. I'm happy to look at this as for a new fan base from a different medium.
I guess I can try. Just, yeah.
So while Harry and Bob are, you know, doing their examination, which basically only at this point yields, it's not from the Never Never.
Yeah, thanks.
Next door, wham, wham, at the laundromat, the Beast is back.
And even, like, he's kind of funny. He's like, no way the killer would come back to the same spot. And I'm like, okay, often what you're dealing with is not. But at the same time, like, lots of crimes happen in the same spots, too. Like,
the next day?
I don't know, maybe.
I mean, this speaks to the lack of logic from the guy who's sending it.
I guess. I find it interesting.
They made all, everything makes sense. He has a list, the whole street. He just started at one street, he's going down the line.
And he's got the pictures, so he just walked down one afternoon, and he's like,
snap pictures, I guess, yeah.
Done.
Okay.
Efficient.
In any, like, murder mystery television, they always just have fucking pictures of everybody all the time. I'm like, I fucking don't have pictures
They've
of
got
my
pictures
kids.
Of, yeah, you don't have pictures of me. That's facts. But the only pictures you own are of your granddaughter and my best friend. That's it.
Physical copies of pictures, okay? Yeah, digital ones, and yeah, half of them are lost now because they were before the cloud and they were, like, digital. And but yeah, I love how no matter what they need, when and where, somebody can always produce a picture of somebody in all of these fiction. But yeah, I was going to say, but even that is the unreality of it because, yeah, you're like, he's just going down the street. And I'm like, okay, but once again, if entertainment has taught us anything, there's always at least one or two people that refuse to be part of the protection racket. So you would have to skip one or two businesses on that. So you can't just be like the guy next door to the guy. Like, they didn't all do it. There's always one or two that are like, I'm not doing that. This is my neighborhood. I know.
And we're not even going to get that deep into it because we haven't even established until this guy dies in Harry's arms that there was a protection racket. Mm-hmm. So this second
but
death
yes,
is really just to establish that there is something else involved, which is Marcone, which solidifies Marcone. We already know Marcone's there because Marcone's like, fuck off, Harry, fuck off.
Well, yeah, he already says his client or something was killed. We already know. But now, yes, now we know what links it and why.
This is
why.
A very powerful beastie because, you know.
Yes.
Harry gets just slammed into a wall and the guy's dead. And then the thing disappears because it's also very fast. Fast, powerful, strong.
Strong.
The creature is strong, fast, and powerful.
but yes, it is an interesting line for until we just find out, right? He's like, but I was supposed to have protection. Yeah. Like, protection? What the fuck? Right?
Just so the function of this scene is to establish not just like that there's murders going, but there's an underlying theme.
Yes. And yes, why these seeming. And then all of a sudden, Marcone
is
like,
still to me not cohesive because this doesn't get resolved of why Madman decides that the people that are under protection is targeting the guys that Marcone is deciding to protect. It just doesn't.
But I just feel that, yes, the crazy was just very, I'm like,
out of nowhere, no reason.
Yeah. I'm like, I guess you're right. You can't, if he was just doing crazy shit. But I was like, yeah, I want a little something. Like, this is,
So we get this wonderful little spy versus spy moment because, like, okay, so Hendrix was apparently tailing all of this, watching and saw this go down and then didn't manage to see the killer, reports back to Marcone.
I mean, admittedly, the killer was some big, like, slime blob that, I don't know, kind of looks like.
Couldn't see, but the wizard was there. He fucked up.
See, I think that's part of it. I don't know if it's just with the coloring or something. He just reminds me of a cross where the golem seems more made out of, like, rock or something, or, like, chocolate, than out of, like, slimy bits. I think that's part of why my...
I took the cue of, it is so much worse when we get to the history of golems, what they're made of, that we've got the clay one, and when he says... Real life is so much worse that it's actually probably like human body tissue that's been.
And maybe it is.
Because it's red.
It is kind of the
and
right
it's oozy,
color.
Like, so plasma ish.
Yeah.
That's but how I take it as the horrific part.
Yeah.
It's never outstated. That's just my guess.
Yeah. I guess in the reddish part, it's just so often, it's just kind of the same like brown, which again, by the way, we're showing Harry's like brown canvas duster, not like a black leather duster, but. Yeah, where just the thing, it just almost looks like this thing is sculpted out of chocolate through most of it. And that's where I get, like, have a hard, like, I don't know. But I guess it could be that reddish, brownish, mud, blood, muscle tissue. Yeah.
Sewer. It's also
sewery.
From the sewers.
Yeah,
so there's
right.
To me, there was the intonation.
Again,
that
it could be the,
it is
the waste.
Foul.
That, yeah. But
I mean, we don't get to it till later.
No, but
I'm
just
taking all of the, okay, in this particular comic, I am going forward into spoiler land for all of it because it is brief.
But yeah,
we'll
it
probably
is kind
cover
of just
it, but
one
we're just
big
going to. I'm going to assume that everybody has read all of it while we're going through it.
Yeah.
So
too late. Hope you guys are cool with that now.
Sorry.
Please read issues 1 through 6.
But Okay, so back to Marcone. He assigns Hendrix to continue to tail, or instead of observe the crime scene, to tail Harry. But then we also find out that Harry has already assigned Murphy and
Rollins
to tail Hendrix. So everybody's following everybody.
Which, again, is still not established as to why. Just like, they're criminals. They're supernatural. We just all want to know about each other. It's like, okay, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I guess presumably because at this point, right, Marcone showed up and said, don't solve this. So Harry's like, okay, you know that case you just called me in? Marcone doesn't want me in on it. So Murphy, you better follow Marcone and see what he's up to.
It's a logical leap.
It is kind of, but like you say, none of it is very explicitly sort of well. And again, that's, I guess, just what I come more used to. Like you say, there's more time and whatever to explain stuff in the novel. But usually those leaps of logic aren't quite as, they are more logical, right? You see, so even if it's not always as explicitly, other than, like you say, the big surprise that Harry always doesn't tell us about towards the end of the book, most of the time you can see where and why. Whereas in this, exactly, it just feels so much more choppy and jumpy and that there's not sort of a cohesion to.
Well, there's two things that I like.
You have to work too hard to put it together.
And the two things that I do kind of appreciate about it is like the humor of everybody's watching everybody at this point. But it does later explain a reason why Hendrix knows how to bring Marcone to the
right place.
Undertown, to the right place to ambush.
Yeah.
So it does have to happen. It is brief, but...
But yeah, it's just
all the fact that everybody's watching everybody just makes me entertained.
All running in a circle.
So we get to this point where we're back to Molly, who is expecting Harry to show up to his apartment for more lessons and or analysis.
Oh, sure. He's busy, be late, but
you know, having a guy die in his arms.
Right. Whatever. So, again, right here.
Teenage rationalization. But she's 20. She should be over the shit by now, right?
This, I don't know what page this is. The graphic novel doesn't have numbers.
Molly at Jerry's home all by herself.
Yeah, but just that panel where she, okay, don't look at me like that, Mouse. I'm completely amped over what happened yesterday. Is that not the most awkward? Who ever walks like that?
She's determined.
And her chest out meditation stance.
But, like, the next one, she looks kind of cool. She's doing a whole deep, like, I don't know, I get kind of a pink vibe off of her. But that is just, like,
yeah, like
the
like,
most
like the Popeye, like, march.
Like, I don't know, you're trying to, like, cross
has
your
a
legs.
Center of balance that is of their own, and hers is her tits. So she has to walk like that.
Her ass is so big and her tits are so big, like, this is how she has to walk.
Her spine is struggling.
I don't care what proportions they are. I don't think anybody walks. Like, she's almost, like, half. Right, like it's just funny.
Okay, draw your own graphic novel then.
I can't draw more shit. Mine are even worse. Well, I just
this reminds me of like
funny the
if, like the studies that they did for Barbie. If Barbie was like actually translated into
her
a
proportions
human, her
would,
proportions would kill her.
Yeah,
she wouldn't actually even be able to breathe. So
yeah, there's no room for all the organs and stuff in there. But yeah, even just aside from
I think
like
they classied up her tattoos. Actually, I don't mind her tattoos in this, but I remember when we read about the tattoos, I was thinking, my God, this is just terrible. These
which
not bad.
She was like 17 in that probably are, but
yeah, the tattoos like, also switch direction left and right.
This is also Molly's knack for veils and things.
Yeah,
she's
she
like
changes
all
the tattoos
all
every
shitty
day.
Shitty tattoos I got when I was 17. I'm gonna just clean those up. I actually have to go pay for another artist. I can just make them look better.
Damn. I wish.
Right?
So Molly decides that she's going to justify what she's doing, which is she's like, oh, okay, I gotta focus. So what am I going to do? I'm going to use telekinesis with a stupid object, but whatever. I mean, yes and no. Okay.
Yes and no.
She is occupying her time, and she is doing her studying, and she's trying to
what they
fill
were,
the time.
They were working on the telekinesis. It's not like Harry was like, don't do this
not
with nobody
stretch.
Around.
The far stretch part is, why would you do that on the mysterious object? There's lots of other things in there, like probably
there
a snow globe.
Because I guess that's the interesting thing. This is the part of the new case. She can't do anything on the new case except look at this blob, so she might as well.
Or we're establishing that she is still quite foolish.
On the flip side, though, like, again, I guess part of the supernatural never assume anything. But, yeah, a broken piece off of something. You know, I wouldn't necessarily assume anything was going to be right. If you had, like, a broken mug at the crime scene and Harry's got a piece of the mug, I'd be like, sure, levitate it. You wouldn't automatically assume that something bad is going to happen because... So on the one hand, I can kind of see not necessarily, like, so it's just a piece of mud left behind,
just
right?
Not but, a lot of foresight in the choosing of the object.
But
it does establish what's going to happen later, either way. And we get another scene with Bob negotiating his flat rate of porn.
Yeah.
And he's
even that is
placated with 12 hours of stripper time.
Awkwardly.
And I mean, if we're looking again at this as new reader to establish character for Bob.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, the skeevy skull spirit.
Skeevy, yeah.
This pulls straight from the last time.
Yeah. So then Harry also says he spends like half an hour walking around and then he comes back and he's like, that was somewhat fast. I'm like, I guess maybe depending on when you want answers, but you sent the skull out. I'm going to expect it to be sort of faster than, otherwise you could just go out and ask your questions.
Yeah.
But you didn't just complain that you spent like half an hour standing around in the cold waiting for him to come back. Oh, that was fast. Like, was it or wasn't it?
I think one of the things that I was surprised at is that he brought him to this nature spirit that is a mischief of rats, which instead of actually bringing him to the source. But I think they do this just so they can make the joke again about all fae type spirits or like the supernatural just loving pizza.
I know, literally.
It's like to make the joke again. First it was Toot Toot, and now it
was a major waste of time otherwise.
The rats.
It was amazing. And I almost feel like, I don't know, it almost takes something away from like Toot Toot and the little. I'm like, why does that have to be pizza again? I mean, other than the fact you sort of went to a pizza.
But to me, this makes more sense. The more we continue to go through this is to attract new readers.
Yeah.
This isn't for us.
Yeah.
This is for new people.
But him being like, but at least I got my steps in for the day, so it's okay.
I'm like, well, even in this too, like, he keeps coming. I made note of it. There's a couple more noticeable parts. But he just, like, almost every paragraph with Harry, he's like, I had to do this, but I had no time. I want to do this, but I had no time. Like Harry has absolutely no time for, like, absolutely anything in this book. Fucking every sentence he starts off, but I didn't have time. I wanted to make a choice here, but I didn't have time, so I really had no choice.
If I had a full-length novel, I would say something about this, but I only have one panel, so.
yeah, pretty much. I was just,
we've come across him urgently having to do things. It's just
urgently having to do things, but again, just the way it comes across in this, like, yeah, Harry says sometimes, like, I was in a pickle, I would have preferred, but again, just like the voice of these, like, I say these noir, like, well, the dame was in trouble and I would have liked to take her out, but I didn't have time, you know, and it's just like, it's literally, it's like every scene with Harry starts with, like, oh, there's all this stuff going on, but I didn't have time to deal with it, I didn't have time to deal with it, I didn't do this, I didn't have time. I'm like, gee, Harry, are you pressed for time in this?
Which, yeah. Especially since, like, he follows this former nature spirit, the rat mischief, down to Undertown to this portal.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have time, so I would expect that he would have actually just gone in to investigate by himself, but he doesn't, because we find out in the next issue, he comes back to his apartment.
Yeah.
I don't even think that it says in here that he's like,
good thing I get.
It just says, now this is the entrance to Undertown, and the spirit's like, I ain't going there, fuck that.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, this is as far as I take you. Beyond that portal lies a labyrinth of fear and evil, a place I want no part of.
So for somebody who doesn't have time, well,
yeah,
why wouldn't you have entered? But it's good that he doesn't, because he does actually, he should go back to prepare himself.
Yes, because Molly, meanwhile, has infused her little test subject.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it now decides, out of all the things it could do, is let me kill this thing that's standing in. It doesn't just leave.
That's true.
It doesn't just leave.
That's what it does.
Well, I guess.
He doesn't have any lead once he goes into Undertown to go where to go next, because the spirit won't go there.
Okay. Well, that's you. Sorry, yes. That's fair.
So he does have to go back.
Again, I guess, but it's like this little blob doesn't stop anywhere else along the way to kill everything else they encounter or don't encounter. They follow it all the way from Harry's place to Undertown, but Molly immediately is like, oh no, I must kill you first before I go anywhere else.
Wait, now, I was going to bring that. Like, because later they say, oh, it's not going to attack us, but it does. It attacks her off the bat.
Immediate.
So now it's
a contradiction.
It got it out of its system.
Yeah.
So we ended this chapter with Molly being attacked by said goop because she fucked around with it telekinetic-wise and charged it, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually a little bit surprised that Mouse didn't even try to, like, eat the shit off her face.
Right? Like, he just stands there going, like, again, you would
he
think
he just barks and goes, oh no.
Again, like, underutilized. Like, he has, like, a supersonic bark that can wake you up from, like, a sleep spell. Mm-hmm. And, like, he has all these, like, odd little things to, like, sense and warn. But here, where he's got something, I'm like, again, he doesn't apparently seem to try and do anything to, like, his supersonic bark doesn't, like, implode this.
Which I think this is why I think that the purpose of these ones are to establish where these two characters are going, mostly Molly and
Marcone.
So this is because she's able to self-sufficiently save herself, as we see in the next episode. This concludes our episode 19.1, Pride, Protection, and a Mischief. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at freeflowrambling.com and maganalys.ca. There we have links to our other podcasts, social media, and other fun tidbits. Please subscribe if you like what you're hearing, and please consider supporting us through Patreon to get the magic alive to see more content. We are Free Flow Rambling. Counterbite at your own risk.